Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The Canby Fire District responded Monday to a reported drowning on the Moala River in Canby's community park for the second time in just over a month. As a brutal heat wave is expected to push thermometers over the century mark and force many residents to seek relief in the area's waterways, Canby Fire Chief Jim Davis tells Now Hear This Canby that this victim was found in almost the same exact location as a 22-year-old man who drowned on the Moala River 5 weeks ago, approximately 300 yards upriver from the boat ramp at Community Park. Fortunately, this episode did not end in tragedy. Davis says firefighters waded through chilly, waist-deep water to reach and rescue the man before transporting him to an area hospital for treatment. Davis confirmed on Tuesday that the man will survive and is expected to make a full recovery. This episode could have easily had a much sadder ending, Davis believes, due to the extreme overcrowding firefighters and EMTs experienced at the park Monday evening. The park was severely over-occupied, Davis says. When we arrived, the fire department had a lot of problems getting across the area and unloading emergency equipment due to the people parking in the fire lanes. Davis has been in touch with the Canby Area Administrator Scott Archer and the Canby Police Department to enforce park rules and ensure first responders have the access they need in an emergency. The fire lanes are well marked, and the police department will be ticketing vehicles or having vehicles towed if they are parked illegally, Davis says. Community Park and other local recreational areas and swimming holes have also already had some problems with alcohol this summer, Davis added. Consumption of alcohol is not permitted in public spaces in Canby, including parks, public waterways, and sidewalks, without a permit. We need folks to know that alcohol and swimming do not mix, he says. We urge people not to drink while swimming and enjoying the river. We are extremely concerned going into this weekend with temperatures well above 100 degrees. The Canby Fire District and Clackamas County have established a local cooling center at Zora Lutheran Church, ELCA, 190 Southwest 3rd Avenue, which will be open from noon Friday through Monday because of the anticipated heat wave. In other heat-related news, Clackamas County Fire Districts have announced a strict burn ban due to extreme conditions brought on by soaring temperatures and low humidity. Both the Canby and Clackamas Fire Districts are at the extreme risk level for wildfires until further notice. This is critical fire weather, Clackamas fire officials said Wednesday, noting that their district's burn ban will be in effect through July 1st. Clackamas Fire encourages the public to exercise extreme caution when outdoors to help prevent the sparks that will cause wildfires. Big or small, the prevention of wildfires is everybody's responsibility. The ban prohibits backyard or open burning, including yard debris and branches, agricultural burning, and any other land clearing slash swamp, waste, debris, or controlled burning. The burn ban does not prohibit small outdoor cooking, warming, or recreational fires, including portable or permanent fire pits and campfires. Recreational fires should be a maximum of 3 feet in diameter and 2 feet in height and fueled only by dry cut firewood. Barbecue grills and smokers with briquettes, wood chips, pellets, or propane are also permitted by the ban. There may be more restrictive open burning rules with the Oregon Department of Forestry boundary. ODF restrictions may include prohibitions on campfires, smoking, target shooting, powered equipment, motorized vehicles, and other public or private landowner and industrial fire restrictions. Outdoor fires in violation of the ban may be immediately extinguished by firefighters, and those responsible may be liable for the costs incurred per state law. For updated information, call the Canby Fire District's daily burn line at 503-266-1195. Those wanting to publicly air their grievances over the decision to exclude 7 students from their high school graduation ceremony were denied their chance last week when Canby School Board Chair Angie Dilks said she would not allow citizens comment at the June 17th meeting due to incivility. The school board's typical practice with regard to public comment involves requiring citizens to submit their remarks in advance to be reviewed by the chair. On previous occasions, Dilks has omitted comments she deemed at odds with the district's civility policy, which bars remarks that, quote, reflect adversity on the background, character, or motives of an individual. But this appears to be the first time in her chairship that she pulled all submitted statements because of what she called the uncivil nature of the majority of comments received. Directors Stephanie Carlson and Don Deppner, who were the only Canby School Board members to take part in the unsanctioned graduation ceremony earlier this month, questioned Dilks' decision to exclude public comment, saying that they felt that at least a few of them did not violate board rules. There were several that were completely civil. So why can't we have the civil ones be read tonight? Carlson asked. It's part of the process. The public has that right to have their comments read and addressed at this meeting. It's a judgment call, and it's one that I've been making all year on this topic, Dilts replied. I've made a decision not to allow it. It does go against policy, Carlson argued. Just so everyone is informed on that. I guess we will agree to disagree on that one, Dilks said. Deppner later read comments by 2 of the recent graduates, Kyle Sander and Damian Santiago, saying the students had been texting her during the meeting. It takes a lot of courage for them to come to a board and talk about their feelings, she explained. I think they feel kind of rejected, and I think they feel we rejected them again tonight. I really feel like we owe these boys the opportunity to speak. Dilks, who lost her bid for a 3rd term on the school board and will leave office next month, offered parting words that were surprisingly personal and an emotional farewell to her colleagues. She addressed her remarks primarily to the members of the Canby School District community, asking them, in their future comments to the board, remember that we are humans on the other end of what's being said. I spent a good chunk of this time trying to keep a couple of people I love very much alive, she said, because they didn't see a lot of reason for being here anymore. But I took on the responsibility. I'm not trying to shy away from that at all. I understand anger. I understand heartache. I've got plenty of that myself. There's that saying, be kinder than necessary because you never know what someone might be going through. I hope that's the spirit that we can go into the next school year with. The Canby Current and Now Hear This Canby obtained copies of the public comments that were submitted for the June 17th meeting through a public records request. You can go read them on our website, canbyfirst.com.
Members of the Canby School Board clashed over school's sexual education curriculum last week before ultimately voting to adopt it, bringing the district in line with state standards after several years of non-compliance. The procedural vote was less consequential than it may seem at first blush. The district's curriculum, which includes The Great Body Shop for 6th through 8th graders and Character Strong for high school students, has already been the standard in Canby classrooms since it was adopted in 2011 following an in-depth community process. Changing or even significantly revising it would take much longer than this summer to research, review, and approve. So the current curriculum was going to be the foundation for sex ed teaching in Canby classrooms during the 2021-22 school year, regardless of Thursday's vote. The question then was really about whether the Canby School Board wanted to move the district into compliance with the Oregon Department of Education's Division 22 rules for the first time since the state adopted new sexuality education standards in 2016. The curriculum will still be taught because it was adopted in 2011 by the Canby School District, Superintendent Tripp Goodall explained. The vote tonight is really about compliance. That said, much of Thursday's discussion centered on the sex ed curriculum and how it was being presented to Canby students and families. Director Stephanie Carlson and Dawn Deppner said they had concerns about several elements of the curriculum, which they had both reviewed. "I know that there are going to be parents that are not okay with some of the stuff that I looked at," Carlson said. "We're here to represent the parents and the citizens, and yes, the standards are important, but the parents should have a final say in what their children are taught as far as sex ed is concerned." Goodall said the curriculum is available to parents to review, and parents have the option to exclude their children from any or all of the human sexuality lessons. Those students are given alternative activities to complete, he explained. "As a parent, I take my role very seriously," Goodall said. "So when I know that kind of curriculum is going to be presented to my son, I make a point of determining whether that's acceptable or not. I would encourage parents to really, again, take time to look at the curriculum and determine if that's what they want taught to their child." But Deppner and Carlson questioned how well this is communicated to families, saying parents have told them they were not aware they could review the lessons or opt their child out. "As a parent, I had to pick my child up from middle school because of something she learned in health class that would probably be okay for every other student, but for her, it wasn't," Deppner said. "I would have liked to have known that curriculum ahead of time because I know my daughter and it caused a lot of trauma." While both said there was much in The Great Body Shop that they found valuable, there were a few lessons they thought were inappropriate for preteens, including one in which 12 and 13-year-olds are taught how to put a condom on, according to Deppner. But some of these claims were disputed by other board members who said they had reviewed the material and gone through it with the health teachers who actually adapt it for use in their classrooms. "I can assure you, and I certainly want the community to know, our kids are not being taught in the sixth grade how to put on a condom," Vice Chair Sarah Magenheimer said. "That's not the reality. I know that's an option in the book, but these teachers spend a lot of time talking about what this looks like in their classrooms, what's the right thing for kids." Carlson requested that the vote on the sex ed curriculum be delayed until it could be reviewed by incoming Canby Superintendent Aaron Downs, as well as two new school board members and a new director of teaching and learning to replace the departing Yvonne Dibley. "I just feel like we need to move a little more slowly on this," Carlson said. "I honestly don't see why we're rushing it. We've already been out of compliance for a while. What's it going to hurt to revisit it and maybe look at some other options surrounding it?" The other director said they supported further review of the curriculum and making sure parents receive proper notification of the opt-out process, but didn't see the point in delaying the procedural vote. "This feels like a weird technicality because we are using the curriculum and we have been using the curriculum," Director Rob Shevlin said. "We're out of compliance because the board hasn't voted on it since 2011. If we decide to pick a new curriculum or revise it through community input, we can still do that." Confusion reigned when Carlson moved to table the sex ed curriculum while the vote to approve it was already underway. It was adopted 5-2 with Deppner and Carlson in opposition. Carlson later argued that her move to table the item should have taken priority over the pending motion according to Robert's Rules of Order. The board agreed to vote on the motion to table. It failed 5-2. Now Here This Sports is brought to you by Reif & Hunsaker, PC. When you need an attorney, turn to the firm Canby has trusted for over 50 years. Call them today at 503-266-3456. Allison Bassett's senior year at Canby High School was not what she would have ever expected, but it was still one she will never forget. After a year contending with the coronavirus pandemic and other challenges, the 2021 graduate capped her final year in public education in the best possible way, helping lead the Canby Cougars girls golf team to a Three Rivers League conference title. In the midst of a difficult year, the golf team patched together a storybook season, winning their first match after only 1 week of practice and ending the season victorious in four of their last five. The road to the conference championship was certainly no cakewalk, with all roads running through district powerhouse West Lynn. They have won many titles in the past year, so to end that streak was remarkable, Bassett says. I felt that my hard work and dedication had finally paid off once I held the trophy in my hands. Bassett practically grew up on the links and has been golfing since before first grade. Still, the sport didn't really become a priority for her until her sophomore year of high school, just in time for the pandemic. The following year, COVID-19 cut her junior campaign short after only 2 weeks of practice, but she made the most of the lockdown. With the season ending abruptly, I turned my confusion and frustration into motivation, she recalls. I used the extra time to play as many rounds of golf as I could. As I kept seeing my score improve, it motivated me. Bassett is also a part-time employee at Stone Creek Golf Club in Oregon City, which afforded her plenty of opportunities to play a few rounds. Her involvement in Canby High's concert choir and the Cantilenas was also a great outlet for dealing with the frustrations of the pandemic. Bassett will continue her education at Oregon State University this fall. She plans to study marketing at the OSU College of Business. Before we sign off today, just a heads up that the Now Hear This Canby team is going to be off this weekend, so no new episode on Monday. Stay safe, stay cool, and we'll see you again on Thursday, July 1st. Hey James, what's going on with the internet? The Wi-Fi is all spotty.
Well, is it your internet or the Wi-Fi?
What are you talking about? Aren't they the same thing?
Well, kind of, but no. You see, your home or office accesses the internet through underground fiber cables from DirectLink. It's actually your Wi-Fi router that converts that internet connection into an over-the-air signal for all your wireless devices.
Okay, you lost me at kind of?
Why don't we even try? Look, you have seen like a box-looking device around the studio here. It's probably hidden under a thick layer of dust.
No, I don't. Is it that blinky flashy thing behind the stack of old pizza boxes?
Yes, it's the blinky flashy thing. That's the Wi-Fi equipment that connects your iPad, your PlayStation, and the laptop to the internet.
I bought that off Craigslist like 8 years ago.
Frankie, I think we just found your problem. Your Wi-Fi equipment is ancient. Electronics, they get old fast. And even when new software updates or faster broadband comes out, your old router just can't keep up. It's like expecting a Model T to outpace those new F-150 Lightnings.
Great. So now I have to make Tyler go buy, I have to go buy a whole new Wi-Fi setup? How does he, I even know what to get?
Look, I'm gonna make it simple. Just call DirectLink, man. Their professional grade Wi-Fi equipment is super affordable, and they'll manage the updates and the network security for you. They'll even help you install your new router in the perfect spot to get the strongest possible signal. You can visit directlink.coop/Wi-Fi to get started.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to make Tyler call DirectLink today. All right, my guest on the Canby Conversation today is Jason Grisham of JLG Creations. Hi, Jason.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. We're out here at your home and shop on South Casto Road. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I understand you grew up in this area out here.
Yeah, so born and raised right here on site in Canby alone.
Right here in this garage.
Exactly. No, so very fortunate. My parents had this place for 50 years. I was living in Oregon City and had an opportunity to come back out here. And
yeah.
I'll never forget when I left for college, telling my parents I'd never be back out here.
Yeah.
And now that I'm out here, I'm so glad I've done it. And it's just so nice. It's, 10 acres out in the country, close enough yet far enough out.
Yeah.
First and foremost, I'm a Canby grad. Mm-hmm. And
go Cougars.
Yeah, absolutely. Go Cougars, right? And Just love having some amazing business customers throughout Clackamas County, and Canby's been a very great opportunity for us, and had a lot of good customers, and we're doing some big new things with a couple customers in town as we speak.
Awesome. Love to hear more about that. So you just had a little youthful rebellion. You were thinking you were done with Canby or what?
No. So, right. I mean, with home prices, the way they were when, I bought my first house, about 10 years ago.
Oh yeah.
Oregon City made sense.
Yeah.
You know, it was still close enough in and whatnot. And yeah. It just wasn't anything in Canby at the time for me.
Gotcha.
And, but now I'm back out here and like I said, you know, it's, back to the country and doing things, like I grew up. And,
yeah.
My 11-year-old son, he's out helping on the farm, and
yeah.
He's actually getting into some woodworking as well, which is pretty awesome because we're a huge sports family.
Nice.
And always on the go with sports. So it's been pretty fun to teach him some wood skills and just some life on the farm and something a little different than 24/7 sports,
yeah.
Even though we're going later today to sports.
Right, to do sports. Yeah. That stuff is so consuming for parents and families and obviously the athletes. It can be. Well, I'd love to, before we talk more about your art, I'd love to just talk a little bit more about the community out here that I, you know, because we live nearby as well, so I know a little bit because of that, but it's very interesting kind of community. When I came out here on assignment and hadn't met you before this, I was, you know, just told there was an artist out here, kind of Newcastle Road. He told me your address, and I was like, oh, is it the shrimp guy? Like, not you, but one of your neighbors has what some folks who have driven out here might know, sort of the weird kind of sculptures that are right on the road. But that's not you.
Nope. That is Ben next door, though. He does do some amazing sculptures. And
like out of metal and kind of
metal
found,
artwork.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah,
and,
it's really cool.
No, it is. And he's doing a lot of stuff for different cities. And I think he actually did something for Canby's downtown or getting ready
to
do something.
Okay.
But yeah, it's go back.
Oh, just the community, yeah.
I mean, that's the great thing about literally we have what do we got? About 6 neighbors right up and down on the start of Spangler, and then it gets out to true farmland. And
country neighbors, which is like you can sort of see their house if you squint and like
exactly. Right? Yeah. Nope, you're 100%. And we've got so like I said, Ben the sculptor up front. Myself doing woodworking, Norwood's right next door doing excavation. You've got Brent 2 houses down. He's another kind of farmer excavator guy. And the great thing is this community is absolutely beyond what I could ever imagine.
Yeah.
You know, especially when the fires happened.
I was going to say, you really saw that come out. You guys had a fire basically across the street from your house.
Yep.
The one on what people would know is, I think it was the Castro Road fire.
Spangler and 213, but yeah, they call it the Spangler fire.
Spangler
but,
Road is what I meant, yeah. Our end of it is Castro. But yeah, the Spangler Road fire. But yeah, it was this weird, I believe that was the one that was started by the RV, dragging chains,
yep.
Sparks got into some brush, and basically lit up this this one property that ended up having some chemicals and stuff in it. It was kind of a rough situation for, obviously, the homeowner and the first responders there as well. That was probably a scary night for you.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, literally, as I was talking to you about it earlier, was I literally driving across the road, go to the other side of Spangler, go check on a buddy's property, and look to, would that be the south side of 213, and literally could see the gentleman running from the RV as it caught fire. Turned around, stopped at Ben the sculptor's house, said, hey, we gotta go check out what's going on.
Yeah.
By the time he even got to his front door, as I called him, first tree was on fire. So I said, we gotta get out of here. Ran up to my house, put some sprinklers on. State trooper came up, said, you gotta go now.
Yeah, I forgot. I in my head, I thought the chains sparked sparks that sparked the brush, but it actually, the RV caught first, I believe.
That's it's I don't know what happened to be exactly,
okay.
But it's the RV caught fire due to chains,
yeah.
And then, you know, they pulled off right there and some dead grass, so
yeah.
You know what happened, who knows, but it's a very unfortunate situation.
Yeah.
Talking to Mr. Mueller, who owns that property, he's got a I think his son's maybe early 50s. Mm. Severely autistic. And he told me, he's like, if I wasn't home, my wife and son wouldn't have known what to do.
Terrifying.
And literally the sheriff told him, you have 1 minute to get out of your house.
Yeah.
And they boot scooted out of there, and you know, they're in the rebuilding phase now as we speak. They've cleared a lot of property, and I think they're roughly within 3 to 6 months of rebuilding, from what I've heard. And we're all very fortunate. You know, my dad passed away about 4 years ago, so he was definitely sitting looking over, because there's no physical, scientific, whatever you want to call it, way that my house should be standing, because the winds were blowing 40, 50 miles an hour towards us with, you know, 5 acres on fire of a bunch of junk. So very fortunate.
Right.
And that goes back to the community real quick.
I was going to say, the neighbors were out kind of, I believe there was at least one person that was going up and down the road kind of putting out embers as he saw.
Yeah, no, exactly. So Brent, he has a, what is he, about 3 houses down. He, like I said, he's the kind of local farmer and just heavy equipment guy. Well, he has a 3,500 gallon water tanker, and he was actually running for the fire station, going up to Leland, up there to Grandview Baptist Church, filling up. And we actually had an ember come over the top, and I was sitting up about a mile, was that east, I guess, and saw a big flame go up and thought, oh, that's my house or my neighbor Norwood's house. And it was a slash pile on Norwood's property, and Brent came up with the water truck and put it out, because the fire department said, we have no manpower to go do it, so if you can make a swoop up there and put it out. And like I said, I mean, it was absolutely insane. Just the, you know, the scariness of it, I guess, as you want to call it, but the community coming together, especially our neighbors, you know, then the looting started happening, and it was pretty cool. Me and a couple of neighbors, we kind of had these different pods, and, you know, we're just out checking people. And I mean, to have 15 cars with no license plates in 24 hours between 2 and 4 a.m. is, you just don't see that out here.
Yeah.
And so it was really cool to see rural Clackamas County come together as a force and just, you know, watching out for their neighbors, you know. And I can count probably 30 or 40 different people I've talked to that I never met my neighbor until that day, you know. And so it was really cool to see the community come together and really help each other out. And at the end of the day, meet your neighbor, right? I mean, everyone in town, they, you know, they walk outdoor and there's their neighbor right there, and they get to know them and talk to them. And like you said, when we started, you know, you can kind of see your neighbor through the woods, and, but everyone really stepped up and helped out, which was amazing.
There's, you know, out here, you're not as physically close to them, and you're, you know, folks tend to be more independent, you know, and there's not as much of a need, except in a crisis, to really reach out. I mean, you also had the ice storm a few months later.
Oh, absolutely.
That knocked this whole area out for almost 2 weeks for power.
Right. And no, it was
a lot of us are on wells, you know, so that means no water either.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, and that's exactly, I mean, that's, you know, everyone's talking about it, you know, and they don't think about that. They're like, oh, you still have water and everything. Well, you know, you're 100% right. We're all on well out here, and no power means no running water and means no electricity, obviously. And yeah, it was
no Wi-Fi for
me. Right.
Mean, that's like,
oh, absolutely.
But I mean, it's kind of funny, but it's also like, how do I do what I do? Like, you know,
No, you're 100% right. My shop, I mean, I got put back about between the two instances, about 3 weeks, 4 weeks. The ice storm put us back about 3 weeks, to be exact. And it is, you know, I mean, everyone jokes about, hey, I'm gonna go live off the grid. Well, I think we've all become so accustomed, especially with COVID, right, of hanging out on our phones or internet or whatnot. And it was same time, it was nice a little bit, you know, but definitely take some things for granted, especially water and power, you know, and heat. I mean, right, that ice storm.
No, I'm a fan of camping, but I like it to be planned.
Exactly, 100%.
And maybe fewer than 12 days, but.
Right.
Well, you know, 10 minutes in or so, let's chat about what we came out here to talk about, right?
Absolutely.
Tell me about JLG and your history with that, how you got into
that,
and what do you do, basically, first of all?
No, absolutely. So, you know, what we do is custom woodworking. Mm-hmm. What we love doing is bringing people's ideas to life. You know, we go in and meet with a customer, and they kind of have a vision of what they'd like to do, and we kind of just walk them through the process of everything. We colors, doors, styles, etc. And then bring that idea to life. And how it really started was about 4 years ago, when I took over my property, my family's property that I grew up in. Remodeled the whole entire house, gutted the whole thing, and there was natural cedar from 50 years ago in all the closets.
Wow.
You know, living on 10 acres here, I have that kind of farm style house going on, rustic decor inside, and so I started making some barn doors. And you know, having some barbecues, parties, having friends over, you know, the wives and people were saying, hey, you should do this kind of, you know, and I was like, yeah, really? And they're like, no, absolutely. It's the whole style. And fast forward 4 years, here we are. And it's become a full time job. We got one employee. And we're doing a lot of fun things. Like I said, our bread and butter is barn doors, but we're starting to branch out into some new things. We just did a giant accent wall, which I'll give you guys some photos of. Doing a big bar in Canby, actually a 7x7x7 U-shaped bar. But kind of do everything. Do some bat flags. I was fortunate to play college baseball. Played baseball in Canby for the high school, 03 grad again. And it was something I've always wanted to do, and I saw it about 8-9 years ago. Couldn't figure out how to cut a bat in half, right?
Yeah, so they're cut in half.
And actually,
right down long ways.
Local small businesses, helping local small businesses. I reached out to a buddy, Nick Sigler, also a Canby. Canby alum grad, Ben Sigler, his brother's a I believe a local realtor. And anyways, Nick and his wife own a sawmill out in where is that? Out in somewhere off Barlow, kind of, or out a little bit further. I can't think of exactly, but reached out to him, said, hey, how can I do this? So he makes me a jig, and I just send all my bats to him, and he cuts them up for me, and then we bring it back and paint them all up and whatnot.
You glue them together or screw them?
So glue the backs, and then everything's stapled, four to five staples per bat.
Gotcha. Cool. It looks really neat.
Yeah, it's something different and unique, and you know, a lot of baseball lovers absolutely love it. We've probably produced about 30 or 40 of those. And then you fast
baseball stadium should be required.
I would love that. Like, absolutely, that's you'd
be
my sales guy.
That should
be
in the Constitution.
Absolutely.
So you do obviously some art like that, but it sounds like your bread and butter, your main thing is kind of these functional, kind of large scale wood based. More unique kind of accent pieces inside of construction or remodels.
So 100%. What it all comes down to, and I would say 85% of the business has been a barn door. So you know, we've gone anywhere from a pantry barn door to a lot of master barn doors where, you know, the husband or wife's getting ready in the morning, and, and some houses just for some reason never had a door there. It's just an opening. And, you know, the closet, for instance, is, you know, you turn on the light and, you know, the wife's getting ready, husband's still laying there and sees the bright light. So now we're closing that off. We've done a lot of French doors, a lot of bypass doors. And I would say a majority of it is absolutely barn door. And I mean, like I said, that's our bread and butter and what we really specialize in. And it's just been a great, fun process. You know, like I said, we've been very, very fortunate with some amazing, amazing customers.
Barn doors are great. They obviously look really cool, but they also have a lot of use in design, right? When you have like a narrow space that doesn't have an opening, have this space needed to do a traditional door. I'm moving my hands, which guys, you guys can't see, but a traditional swinging door, and you know, you don't have to open the wall up to install like a sliding door.
Nope, you're absolutely right, and I mean, just pure functionality of your, it doesn't take up space of a swing like a normal swinging style door. The barn door, you know, as long as you have the space for it to slide open, exactly, takes that space open, and it's also kind of an art piece, you know, for a lot of people. Just
They look really cool.
Take the color. What's going on, Brett? Take whatever color they want, whatever style, and I mean, I'd say 80% of the doors just stay open as an art piece.
And most of your work, I mean, most of the ones I've seen barn doors in general are usually the natural wood color, right? People don't do a lot of paint with them.
I would say 90% of it is a stain, because we do a lot of knotty alder, knotty pine, just a lot of the knotty look, which is that rustic style.
Right.
And by staining it, it really pulls out all the characters of wood.
Nice.
Painting really hides it all. So yeah. We try to steer people into the stains.
Yeah.
And then we've actually made a couple custom colors that have been very popular as of late.
Cool.
And so, you know, every customer is different. It's kind of funny. They come in waves. Sometimes we'll get a batch of grays, we'll get the dark ebonies. Right now we've got a custom color we call Ben's Wood. A buddy of mine actually created it.
Nice.
And that's been very popular for us. It's kind of like a gray espresso blend together.
Interesting. Yeah.
So yeah.
Cool. You mentioned that you have a couple of kind of cool projects you're working on right now.
Yeah, so as we're currently in, we just wrapped up a huge, about 90, 95 orders, give or take. You know, not all. We had a lot of multi-customers, which is great, and so we give discounts for that. We also give discounts for veterans or police, fire, all of those type of people, emergency responders, let's call it. But no, we just wrapped up about 90 pieces just went out the door in the last 6 months. Right now we're working on, we got some mini doors. We're going on a bar. A customer already had a previous kind of bar top for outside. So they wanted two little mini doors to go on.
Oh, cool.
And then we're working on a big cedar bench project right now. Customer, they've just built this beautiful, beautiful pergola with fire pit. And I mean, it's something you just put out on a lake, and
yeah.
I mean, what you always see in the magazines, they just built this, and so we're putting these little accent cedar benches all the way around that'll all tie together. Then we've got another a big four pane glass door coming down the pipeline here in the next 2 weeks or so.
Oh, cool.
And we just wrapped up a massive, what was it, almost 17 foot accent wall with a big window in the middle.
Nice.
It was on a two-story house. Kind of go up the landing, make a turn, and they just had us wrap that whole entire wall with some pine tongue and groove wood. So
cool. Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Well, the last thing I wanted to ask you about, Jason, is obviously, you know, from what I hear, this is just a great time to be in the wood business. Wood is so cheap and so easy to find. No, just kidding. Obviously,
I wish,
it's
man.
A real challenge to the industry right now. How's that affected you? How are you handling that?
So two things. I mean, right, COVID, as we all know, it's here.
Yeah.
And for construction purposes, it's been a blessing for us.
A lot of more people than I think expected. You know, I think the expectation when COVID first hit was construction was going to be one of the industries that got really shut down. But turns out a lot of people being working from home or being shut in their homes decided, I'd like to do some remodeling.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Is everyone's updating their house, right?
Yeah.
I still think going forward, we've all come to a custom of learning how to work from home, and we might have to not have to go in the office as much. So.
Yeah.
A lot of people are updating their homes, and I'll never forget talking to Acacia at Canby Builders, where I get a lot of our material. First 2 months of COVID, oh man, it is just crazy, right? All these DIYers are coming in, and they're so accustomed, all these contractors, okay, here's my order,
right.
pop,
right.
Well, now it's turned into, she's like, oh my gosh, this is overwhelming,
oh,
everyone's
yeah.
coming in.
A lot
in.
Of more hand-holding than she's
yes,
doing.
No, absolutely. But the team down at Canby Builders is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
But no, you're right, I mean, the wood pricing is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Just the,
what have you seen? What horror story? I mean, it's like,
oh, let's start with so Radiata Pine, which is what we do a lot of, which is a cabinet grade plywood. We do a lot of our cabinets with our we do a lot of shaker style barn doors.
Yeah.
And a sheet, no joke, let's go 4 months ago,
yeah,
was $36. $66.
Wow.
As of last week.
Wow.
I mean, just look at OSB. Not that we do any OSB, but you know, that's a good eye to keep on things. And that went from $38, let's call it in February, to $78 last week.
Wow. Double.
It is. Absolutely.
A quarter. That's
yeah.
insane.
Our pine boards that we're using, they've doubled in the last 4 to 6 months.
Yeah.
And so the hardest thing though is the inventory.
Yeah.
Is just there's no inventory available.
Yeah.
You know, all these, you know, Canby Builders, Par, even the big guys, Home Depot, Lowe's, you know, they're trying to go to these mills and say, hey, we want 150% of last year's number.
Yeah.
Well, the mills can only produce 75 of last year's number. And right. so there's too much demand yeah. and not enough supply, which yeah. has driven up prices. The positive is, you know, unfortunately, for any of you stockbrokers or stock market players, you know, lumber futures finally are starting to come back down yeah. As of last week. So that's a positive for us on the wood side because, you know, talking to some builder buddies that $50,000 to $75,000 on an extension because yeah. of just lumber prices, which yeah. then the banks aren't loaning to them. Yeah. So it's kind of getting crazy right now, and I'm hoping it's going to settle down a little bit and just come back down to normal because yeah. at the end of the day, it's not fair to the customers. And like I said, we've been fortunate to have some amazing, amazing customers that have worked with us. And, you know, but the hard part is locking in prices.
Right.
Prices are going up daily.
Yeah, yeah. And I think things will adjust eventually. We're seeing some impacts of, like you mentioned, obviously the wildfires, the COVID, and how that impacted so many industries and markets on a really large scale. I think we're still seeing ripples from that, but I think things will bounce back. Jason, it's been really great to talk to you. How can folks get in touch, learn more about what you do?
So we're on Facebook, JLG Creations, Instagram as well, in the process of working on a website. But, you know, Facebook has been an amazing resource for us and where all of our business has been generated. And the great thing for us is, I would say, again, you know, I've used the 90-plus percentage, but 95% of our business has been within 20 miles of my house and wow. shop, which yeah. is just amazing. It just shows how amazing local communities are, and supporting local
yeah.
Is very important, especially for times of what are going on. But just been very fortunate. You know, the Facebook community, Canby Now, has been a huge supporter, and there's a lot of people out there sharing stuff that we've been doing, and we're super, super fortunate to be able to put out quality and having those customers keep referring us. And we've had a lot of repeat buyers for adding more homes. We actually just had one customer put 7 doors in their house.
Wow.
I mean, just crazy. They couldn't stop. So.
Yeah.
But those awesome. Are the customers that make it worth it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. They have a nice consistency throughout the house. That
might yep. No, exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks, Jason.
Absolutely.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with 3 realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time, and yeah. sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
Well, friends, we're going to draw this episode of the Canby Now podcast towards a close with this episode of Canby Then. This time it's brought to you by Retro Revival, not your average antique shop. They're open daily, and you can find them on the corner of Northwest 3rd and Grant Street in downtown Canby, or connect with them through email at retrorevivaloc@gmail.com. They say all's fair in love and war, but that doesn't necessarily mean all's love in war and fair. Indeed, a war of words was fought in 1908 over control of the fledgling Clackamas County Fair, and Canby was the winner. The fair had started in Gladstone and was a smashing success, but enterprising folks in Canby thought they could do better, and they had just the spot in mind, a beautiful 40-acre plot on the east side of town on land once owned by Supreme Court Chief Justice Aaron E. Waite and still held by his descendants. Led by the Canby Development League, Chairman R.S. Coe, and 23 other league members, the town was ultimately successful in bringing the fair to Canby, where it would remain for the next 112 years, at least. A groundbreaking was held in late July 1918 to begin construction on the fairgrounds' buildings and a first-class racetrack, and it was a festive occasion. Local officials came out in droves to view the beautiful grounds and make speeches under a stand of drooping fir trees. The mayor of Canby, J.F. Mitz, had proclaimed the day a local holiday, and many downtown businesses closed their storefronts in honor of the momentous occasion. Canby's Silver Comet Band met visitors at the old train depot, which I guess back then would have been the new train depot, and whisked them through a grand processional to where the ceremonies would be taking place. Numerous delegates from surrounding communities were there to, quote, rustle on the sidelines and make all the noise as needed, as recorded by the Oregonian. Judge Grant Dimmick, whose later exploits would reveal him to be one of the most sinister rogues in the county's history, exhorted his listeners to do all in their power to make the fair a success by talking and working for the enterprises in season and out of season, according to the Canby Tribune's chronicling of the event. Another early fair booster, Professor Theodore Gary, went even further. Mr. Gary advised everyone to boot up, and if we hear anyone talking against the fair, to take him out and hang him, or something to that effect, the newspaper noted. His remarks were timely and well-received. Well, no hangings were recorded, but the work on the new fairgrounds came together splendidly. Out of the Waite family's rich farm and forest grew barns, arenas, stadiums, and outbuildings, some of which still stand to this day. Unlike the 1907 fair, which had been headlined by a gaudy carnival from out of town, which included a mask ball, Mardi Gras, freak show, and family feud-style contests, the centerpiece of the Canby Fair would be its sparkling new horse racing track. The half-mile racetrack has been placed in order during the past few days and is pronounced by experts to be one of the finest tracks in the state, the Oregonian declared. WH Council is directing the grader, steamroller, and sprinkler at the fairgrounds, and the racetrack will be in first-class condition. Cash prizes of up to $1,000 were awarded to the fastest horses, thanks to liberal contributions from Portland businessmen and across the state. Not that it was all about speed. Slow trotting was also a popular form of racing entertainment in those days, and several were scheduled for the three-day event. A five-mile relay race for pupils of the local schools was also considered an interesting feature. Other prizes would be given to top show performers for horses, cattle, sheep, swine, poultry, vegetables, fruit, and all kinds of farm products. Awards will be given for ladies' textile products, bread, cakes, pies, preserved fruits, etc., the Oregonian said. 50 special prizes will be awarded for the best of exhibits of every kind of farm, garden, or horticultural product. The most popular day was Friday, which had been designated Oregon City Day, something that had also been done at the 1907 fair. According to an earlier article, the entire town promises to pay a Canby a visit and enjoy the raptures of country life for a day. Well, that might have been an exaggeration, but not by much. 3,000 souls visited the Clackamas County Fair that day, and almost a third of them from Oregon City, which in those days had a population of just north of 4,000. There were so many folks from Oregon City, a special train was on hand just to take them home at the end of the night. The attendance was far greater than was anticipated by the fair officials, a newspaper later recorded, and was due partly to the perfect weather and in no small measure to the fact that nearly 1,000 people came from the county seat to make a boost for the old Clackamas and her fine products that filled the big pavilion. The display of products of the soil were amazing in variety and quality, though not so numerous as the previous year, due to a late frost. Nevertheless, the mammoth vegetables and luscious fruits grown by the family farms that thickly encircled the community and its fairgrounds attracted wide attention. The horse races, though, were widely considered to have been far superior to the previous years. They were more and better horses in competition, nearly 500 in number, and the crowds poured in from all directions to see them pound the dirt. The fair wrapped up with an exhibition baseball game, with a hometown team hosting the Spantons from Portland. With one of the night boys on the mound and pitching a no-hitter, the Canby Bats got hot and spanked the visitors 16-0. That's what I call an old-fashioned thrashing. The fair had found its permanent home, and in the rich Canby soil, it was prepared to grow and grow. That, however, is a story for next time on Canby Then. Well, friends, as always, thank you for listening. I'm James Walton. Have a great day.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? Or no. That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Yep. Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.